Hello and welcome to the Learning College put on by Vanguard Audiobooks. That means me, Alex Linder. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com and also later permanently archived at alexlinder.com. Oh, I forgot to look up the two words that I was going to tell you about, but we have, I think, 9 chapters left, so I will do that in one of the future chapters. Today we're going to resume Randolph O. Calverhall's Serpent's Walk with chapter 21, and that will be the whole of what we do today, whether it takes 45 minutes or an hour plus. So let's begin. It starts with an epigraph from Shakespeare. If we shadows have offended, think but this, and all is mended, that you have but slumbered here while these visions did appear. A Midsummer Night's Dream, William Shakespeare. Chapter 21, Monday, July 13th, 2048. I still can't believe it, Wrench marveled. It's him, all right. Been working for us for a year or more. Rose here recognized him. General Copley motioned the woman forward with a freckle-splotched hand. Captain Rose Thurley, Cadre Commander, Wren. How? Where did Lessing? For once Wrench was at a loss. He must be an immune. One day he wandered in out of Pakov territory, the woman answered, diffidently. Diffident means shy or timid. In an old Russian bakery van. Absolute bonkers. Tell him about the girl, the fourth person in the room suggested, the seedy-looking mercenary named Kenow, K-E-N-O-W. He also wore officer's pips, but in these jumped-up settler militias, actually the merest armies of occupation, insignia meant whatever the wearer said it did. Right, well, in the back of this van, like, he had digs fixed up for himself, a cot, a kerosene stove, and supplies, just like a caravan, trailer, you Americans call it. RV is what they mean by caravan, or van, or RV. The girl, Kenow persisted. Yes, all right, but first, I had charge of border patrols then. New Sverdlovsk has frontiers and customs now, and refugee resettlement camps, and what all. One of my squad saw this big van coming in. They stopped it, and there was poor Lessing, all wild hair and beard, like a sodden caveman, got up in an Azerbaijani vest, Israeli army pants, and Russian peasant boots. Guns and ammo enough to do the bleeding world. She twisted at a strand of gray-streaked red-blonde hair. The little man in natty black uniform of the cadre of the American Party of Humankind unnerved her. Well, in the corner of the cargo compartment, we seen this girl, a child, like, sitting propped up against the wall. A real knockout. Kenow rolled his close-set eyes. A kid of 12 or so, you bloody dink. Dead as a dodo, and mummified, too. Shrunk down to bones with skin stretched over him, wrapped in rags. Dead? Wrench wasn't sure he had heard her right. Lessing was carting around a dead girl? Hard to get a date in these parts, Kenow observed dryly. Called her Emily. Sometimes Mavis. Sometimes Beverly. Sometimes driver lady. You should have seen her, poor little thing. Dried out like them pharaohs of Egypt. He wouldn't part with her. Took persuading, 3 orderlies and a needle full of narcodine to pry him loose and get him to the hospital. You knew him right away? I didn't see him then, myself. The watch sergeant put in a report, but nobody thought much about him. We used to get a dozen of these immunes every week, each weirder than the last. Dying people, crazies, too far gone to be helped. There was one, a Russian woman, big as a gubbin gorilla. Stark naked. Painted herself all over with crosses, coming shooting. Wrench motioned her to get on with her story. Ah, when did you recognize Lessing? She eyed him cautiously. He sounded more like an interrogator than a man looking for a long-lost friend. A long time after. We fed him, gave him a job in the fields. A lot of the brain-damaged ones could do that much. And let him be until he either croaked or his wits came right. Nearly all of them died, you know. Most of Pakov's immunes weren't really so. They were just delayed reactions. 90% went down at once. Some lived on for a week or two, and a few lasted 6 months or more. Them who made it beyond that, you could count on your fingers. We was surprised to find Lessing survived. Artie Carlson, he's our census keeper, thought his records was snookered. You knew Lessing when you saw him? Right, I'd met him a while ago. We was mercs together. She tried to keep the wariness out of her voice. This cadre commander, Wren, was said to be high up in the hierarchy of America's ruling party. I knew him the same way, Kenau stated self-importantly, but I was sure fooled. Must have seen him out there 100 times, hoeing away, pulling weeds, and I never spotted him. He never said nothing, neither, just worked. Wrench played with the buttons on his uniform coat. He hadn't expected Russia to be so warm in July. The woman took up the thread again. One day he stopped by the hospital and asked where his Emily was. The dead girl, he meant. Anyway, Dr. Casimir, our on-staff psych staff, was curious enough to make him tell his story. Somehow he mentioned Colonel, General Copley. Named me, too. Then the rest come out. Our headquarters is just over the road from the hospital, so they sent for me. General Copley turned away from the one window. The view was not prepossessing. Squarish. Neatly painted. Unimaginative. Prepossessing means attractive. Russian architecture, but broad, uninspired streets. Soviet vehicles repaired over and over to save on the colony's dwindling reserve of Israeli and American transport. He addressed Wrench. Rose called me. I knew Lessing right away. He served in my unit. Good man. He looked somehow dull and uninterested, as though he wanted to get back to something else. Yeah, good old boy, Johnny Kenau added earnestly. Served with him in the Baalbek War, back in 38. Saw him again in Guinea, just before BP, before Pakov. After Pakov hit, I grabbed a plane, a load of goodies, and the Empress Marie Leonor Teresa of Guinea. Here we come. Pakov got most of the Guineans, but me and the Empress, she's French, made it out. Married her. He displayed nicotine-yellowed teeth proudly. Now she's got a bun in the oven, 6 months pregnant. Stories like Kenau's were routine. General Copley scuffed one immaculate riding boot against the other. Wrench asked, Is Lessing recovered? Did he tell you what happened to him? Not much that makes sense, Rose answered. About some ship, a sea voyage, naval action, a storm, frogmen. And about Emily and Beverly and Mavis, a whole bloody platoon of girlfriends. If Wrench's information were correct, this woman had once had a passion for Lessing, which would probably why she had rescued him from what amounted to open slavery in New Sverdlovsk. Digging was worth a try. Wrench said, the last we saw of him, he was managing a resort in the South Pacific. The Izzy's raided the place and burned it to the ground. They slaughtered 217 people, including nearly 100 kids on vacation. Lessing disappeared. We figured either he went up in smoke or else got thumbed on the beach and his body washed out to sea. We never knew what happened to him till now. And he retaliated by destroying Israel with Pakov, General Copley rapped. He had a reputation as the kind of merc who did not approve of biological warfare or anything much longer range than a thrown rock. He preferred hand-to-hand weapons, fists, teeth, and nails if possible. Not us, not true. Serve the gubbin Yudis right, Kenau cackled. Folks say they started Pakov in the first place. Wrench shook his head. No truth to that story either, as far as we know. He grinned. Congeniality was a useful trait. It would likely get him what Mulder had sent him for. Alan Lessing, miraculously alive after more than 4 years. The party could use a hero. Living testimony to the perfidy of the Vizzies and the Izzies and what with war now brewing in California. He picked up his peaked officer's cap and rubbed at its enameled insignia. A red shield on which a black circle surrounded a white background. The circle was divided into 4 quarters by a thick black cross. One day, soon, they'd open the black circles in 4 places just before its intersection with each arm of the cross. The door latch clicked. It was an orderly. He saluted and whispered to Copley. Seems Lessing's got a second visitor, Copley announced. Another of your people, Cadre Commander Wren. A woman. That'll be Annalisa Meisinger. She was in Seattle when we got the news Lessing had been found alive here. damn it, he had tried to keep Lisa from learning too soon. When she thought he was dead, and Emma Delacroix with him, she'd almost done herself in out of grief. Now this shock. Who knew what effect a deranged or brain-dead Lessing would have on her? Lisa entered in a swirl of smoke-gray dirndl skirts. She had never adopted the severe black-and-white uniform prescribed for female party members. Beige or pale gray suited her better, usually with black accessories. Today she had added a neckerchief of scarlet silk for emphasis. Women recognized this as a power wardrobe. Men saw it as elegant and sexy sophisticated. General Copley was now wide awake and paying attention, Wrench noted. And Johnny Keenow was openly admiring her. Rose Thurley gave her a perfunctory nod. Lisa homed in on Wrench. Lessing? He's fine, these people say. Some psychological difficulties. He hadn't had time to alert Copley and his subordinates to Lisa's speech problems. Crazy as a cat in a barrel of whiskey, Keenow chuckled. Wrench sent the man a warning glare. Insensitive son of a bitch. Lessing still suffering from hallucinations, wandering all alone those years among the ruins and corpses. He brightened deliberately. Now I have to rewrite the funeral oration I gave for the Gizmo on Ponape. Hero of the party, martyr of the cause, Lisa quoted and laughed. Her voice sounded shaky, on the verge of tears. Lessing was waiting for them in the hospital garden, seated on a lawn chair and framed by a trellis of red flowers. He stood up. Lessing? Wrench heard Lisa's sharply indrawn breath behind him. The man looked older, thinner, graying, sun-blackened, lined and calloused with hard labor. His Russian slacks and open-necked white shirt didn't fit him very well. He looked like an aging farmhand. His voice was the same, though. Wrench? Then Lisa? Hello. Copley shook hands, made excuses, and departed. Keenow and Rose Thurley stayed. The woman's expression was a study in possessiveness, anxiety, and something else that ran a lot deeper than old Merc buddies. Lisa might have to watch out for herself. Why, Lisa gulped, didn't call us? The blue eyes, paler than Wrench remembered, smiled, then shifted obliquely away. No. Why not? No reason to come back. Didn't want to get back into BGing. Too old to be a merc. And I heard you people were busy rebuilding America. You'd have no time, no place for me. Farming feels better. Plants and dirt. Rain and sun. Lisa flicked a glance at the Australian woman. Happy? Fairly. He waited, relaxed, calm, and patient. Wrench said, We could have taken care of you, Lessing. We, you and I... All of us are more than just business acquaintances. God damn it. You only had to get to the American settlement in New Moscow to call us. Reached Ufa, he answered irrelevantly. Izzy's there. They nearly thumbed me. Keenow muttered, Ufa's a town down the road a piece. Yahudi headquarters for this region. Our rivals, a tough bunch. They want Sverdlov's steel mills, heavy engineering, and plastics. We got a lot of stuff they'd love to get their cotton pickers on. Lessing said, Copley thinks one day we'll have to fight the Izzy's right here in Russia. He might have been discussing the lush crimson blossoms behind him. Come home, Lisa urged softly, now. He looked at her, disconcerted for the first time. Home? Is Sonny there? He talks about this Sonny sometimes, Rose told her quietly. Somebody he met in Israel, we think. Wrench said, He fought there in the Baalbek War. A fellow merc? Not likely. Sometimes he cries when Dr. Casimir, who's been treating him, mentions Sonny. Maybe an Izzy he had a bad time with. Lessing had overheard. He said, He's dead. I saw him. It was his green pants. I pulled out of the car. He's told us that, too, about a fire, a dead city. Ponape? Lisa wondered. No, Lessing spoke directly to her. Jerusalem. Rose shook her head. This is where it gets vague. He'd have had to fly like a bloody rocket from Ponape to Israel in time to be there when somebody dosed the Middle East with Pakov. But then he talks about a ship at sea, a storm, and the rest I told you upstairs. Sometimes he says the driver lady drove him to Jerusalem. Or maybe from Jerusalem to someplace else. God. Does he ever talk about his comrades from Ponape? Wrench asked. The Swedes found bodies in the cells in ARAD headquarters in Jerusalem. One of Lessing's friends, an Arab named Abu Talib, was among them. He talks a bit about some woman named Emma. Once, under hypnosis, he yelled at somebody named Malin to run away and hide. That's all. Emma Delacroix, a nice old lady who lived most of her life in Africa, the Izzy's grabbed her off Pone Ape and then she disappeared. She could have been wounded and died en route to Israel or later in one of their prisons. Malin was killed on Pone Ape. As for Abu Talib, the Izzy's had worked him over pretty bad, but the real cause of death was Pakov. We identified him from dental records. His wife and maybe one son are alive, though, went off to Saudi Arabia or somewhere. Like, Lessing blocked out the whole shooting match, Rose said. What you don't think of never happened. Lucky bugger, in a way. A compact middle-aged Hungarian with bushy, brindled black eyebrows and hair to match came bustling across the grass toward them. Rose identified him to the others as Dr. Casimir. The newcomer looked from one to the other. General Copley says you want to take this patient back to the United States. I don't see why. He's recovering nicely here. Wrench drew on the authority of his party uniform. He's one of ours, Doc. We have a duty to him. Well, we are quite capable. Of course. But your government, General Copley, has agreed with our government, your party of humankind. Please, Lessing should go back with us. We can provide him with the best therapy available. His friends... He's at peace in Sverdlovsk, the doctor said. I wish you'd never discovered he was here. Wrench had no idea who had told the party's agents in New Moscow of Lessing's presence. Kinau? Copley himself? Possibly just a stringer trading miscellaneous information for a few clips of American ammo? Or a case of banger palm tapes for the holovid? Oh, I've been saying palm is porn, obviously. See, this is the problem with these... OCR'd PDFs that have not been manually corrected in the typo, so like an idiot. I knew it was porn, but I kept saying POM, even though I should have seen. So, banger is their freaky young blue hair types. Porn tapes for the holovid. The informant was not Rose Thurley. Her face was as readable as a billboard. We are taking him, doctor. Wrench glanced over at Rose. You can come and see him whenever you want. We'll fly you over at our expense on an American government RUSOPS plane. It's green light by me. The woman seemed ready to be reasonable. He ought to go where he can be treated best. Right here in Sverdlovsk, said the patient himself. Wrench, I'm fine. Everything I need. Rose and Johnny and once in a while Colonel Copley to shoot the bull with. He paused. And I really should stay close to Beverly. She can't move around much, you know. Understatement of the bleeding year, Rose breathed. That'll be the dead girl. She's recuperating, though, Lessing continued cheerfully. As soon as she can travel, Lisa turned away. Damn it, Wrench thought glumly. This had to happen. Lisa had not been well, and the doctors had put her on Cheery Pops, the latest mood-altering drug. Lessing got up and went to her. She turned her head, murmuring something plaintive that no one else could hear. Then she stood stiffly still, drawing in upon herself. It must be hell, Wrench thought, to be embraced by a ghost. I don't have much choice, do I? Lessing asked. He stepped back. You're taking me with you to the United States. Lisa's voice was muffled but still audible. Yes. Come. We want you. Wrench said, You can help, man. We can help, man. You belong with us. Then I better go pack. Wait for me upstairs. He sounded only mildly concerned. His healing had a ways to go yet. They went inside to a pleasant pastel blue waiting room. They sat awkwardly on formal, straight-backed wooden chairs around what looked like a card table covered with green plastic padding, while one of Dr. Casimir's subordinates served them tea and buttered croissants. Wrench busied himself with the food. It gave him time to think, and Lisa time to recover. Lessing's going to be all right. He tried to sound definitive for Lisa's sake. Dr. Casimir watched Lisa. He gestured for Rose to go to her. To Wrench, he replied, Of course. The prognosis becomes better with each day. Tea? We don't get good tea anymore. Most of the tea-producing countries are too messed up to export much. The doctor sipped. It's lemons and sugars we cannot obtain. one of the Chinese successor republics flies tea over to us, and we've started to plant our own sugar beets. But the Izzis, Turks, and Pakistanis moved into what used to be Israeli territory to our south and west, and they are not so friendly. Let me know what you want, Wrench offered expansively. We can fly you in some citrus fruit. Spain, Italy, southern France are all back on their feet and ready to deal. The doctor waggled an eyebrow. Your party of humankind rules much of Europe now, as well as North America, eh? You can command lemons from the Mediterranean, olives from Greece, wine from France and Italy, butter from Holland, all the good things from the old days. We trade, yes, but the party doesn't rule anyone anywhere. There are sister organizations in several European countries, but no international superstructure beyond a liaison committee. We have less real power, even in America, than the old political parties did. Local autonomy. That's us. Dr. Casimir's remarkable eyebrows descended in a frown. If you say so, but I have read a bit about National Socialist ideas of local autonomy. Well, things are different now. This isn't the 20th century. We don't want secret police and five-year plans. We are for free enterprise and personal incentives. Not socialism, state control by your monolithic party. Wrench smiled. We do support the coordination of major economic production, what the Germans called Gleichschaltung. We're experimenting with that. The human race must manage its resources for the future. But we leave smaller businesses and industries alone. They're more free now than they were under the democracy of the old USA, which is really bureaucratized socialism. We have less taxes, less control, fewer restrictions. America's government more truly implements the will of the people now than it has for generations. There are protests, we hear. Sectors that disagree with you? Well, sure, there always are. Fat cats kicked off the gravy train, welfare frauds made to work for their money, middlemen who actually have to produce something useful for a change. We are setting reasonable rates of interest, stopping the siphoning off of wealth by usurers and money men, changing over from a paper money economy to one based on real goods. That's only for starters. We're also standardizing the law, doing away with injustices, cutting down top-heavy government, training the jobless, improving education, and helping the farmers keep their land. And if anybody thinks all this is easy, he's welcome to try it. And the blacks? The Jews? They're not overjoyed. Many blacks are emigrating to Africa now that Packoff has almost wiped it clean north of the South African border. There are several colonies, the biggest run by an American black, a Muslim named Khalifa Abdullah Sultani. We're working to help him get things going. The Jews are another story. They're used to being at the heart of government, at the top of the professions, in the media, in business and finance, and lately central in state and local activities too. When Sterak took down our big cities, their power went way down. We've taken steps to make sure that it stays down. But they're back at their old tricks, stirring up trouble, trying to incite the blacks and other minorities that are left, working day and night to wreck what we built. We'll have to deal with them more strictly and soon. Maybe we'll send them off to what's left of Israel as soon as the decon team say it's clean of Packoff. It's certainly empty of Arabs now. Or they can join the Israeli colonies here in Russia. Either place they should be happy. We'll gladly help them resettle. The doctor gazed up at the ceiling. The other day I mentioned the vanished Russians to Mr. Lessing. You know what he answered? He said, "We are the Russians. Ring out the old, ring in the new." Smart. Under the circumstances. My ancestors were English, but now I'm American, pure and simple. I don't demand to return to my homeland, kick out the king, and run England. The past must not dictate to the present and the future. The Jews have never been able to see this. They insist on their ancient tribal identity right out of the Old Testament. Yet you don't want them to assimilate, to mingle, and disappear into your population, do you? Frankly, no. We don't want them to change us. That's happened enough already. When they came to America as refugees, we took them in. Then they took the place over and started remaking it to suit themselves. They turned America into a multiracial pigsty. We'll breathe easier when we're completely free of them and their influence. Dr. Casimir glanced over at the two women, heads together as though they had been friends for years. The old order changeth. Changeth, yes, but not so easily. You have to have a grassroots revolution to change an entrenched traditional system. Anything less is cosmetic. We've learned that gradual reform is damn near impossible, especially when you're fighting vested interests, a power elite, an establishment. Like the Russian Revolution, the French Revolution, or the Izzy's conquest of the Arabs, a real revolution has to be tough and thorough, a clean break with the past. Such an upheaval can't help but cause suffering. Draconian, that's the word I want. You call for a violent, harsh, and simplistic solution, a draconian answer to complex questions. And Draco was a Greek ruler who was pretty tough. Hence, draconian, the adjective. Wrench grinned amiably, like giving up smoking or booze, which I'm trying to do now. Cold turkey is hell, but cutting down little by little doesn't work with me. This is different, Cadre Commander. We're talking about people and hallowed, age-old institutions. Yes, people who have been duped and controlled and exploited for centuries by those age-old institutions. Doctor, they deserve better. National Socialism? Yes, not exactly what they had in the Third Reich, perhaps, but still, National Socialism. We're working toward a world order that guides but does not tyrannize, that honors creators, producers, and workers, that helps the needy out of their troubles instead of piously tossing them alms. You're an idealist, Cadre Commander, or a fool, probably both. Proud to be both. We can't go on depending upon archaic tried-and-true solutions, not after Pakov and Sterak. We have to experiment. The economists and political scientists, the darlings of the liberal academic establishment, gave us garbage. They couldn't predict economic or social trends any better than the fortune-teller lady at the carnival. They handed out guesswork theories wrapped in statistics and jargon and served up with all the pontifical authority of the Vestal Virgins. They flubbed. Now it's our turn to try. Well, so who are your economic experts? Adolf Hitler? Vincent Dorn? Your great thinker who hides behind a pseudonym and an army of bodyguards? The doctor was well informed. Much of what Wrench had been saying did indeed come from Dom. Wrench said, partly right. Dom's our theorist, our historian, the one who sees best through the fog. But he can't handle it all. The world's too complicated. We've got other experts. Plus the most sophisticated computer ever devised. It's able to compare and evaluate maybe a billion variables at once, and it has data banks that contain every bit of information all the way back to creation. You would let a machine run humanity, our lives. Well, why not? No individual or group can control all the data, much less weigh probabilities and assess long-term results. We set our goals. No machine does that for us. And then our computers tell us how to attain them. Data management I can see, but decisions made by a machine, the future of the world, will be a lot better off than under a lot of human leaders I can name. Their faces had grown flushed and their voices had risen. Lisa and Rose broke off their conversation and looked over at them. The doctor said, "And Alan Lessing, how does he fit into your computer plan for the master race?" "He is and was a valued co-worker. He's also an old friend. Nothing more." He was a protege of Herman Mulder, who was Secretary of State to President Outram and Vice President of your Party of Humankind under Dom. "That's so?" Wrench regained control. "Did Lessing talk about Mr. Mulder?" "No. He never mentions anything after his, what do you call it, secondary school, high school. General Copley told Rose about Lessing's friendship with Mulder. Well, he was Mr. Mulder's bodyguard out in India. When he vanished in the Pone Ape raid, the Mulders were devastated. Now that he's turned up, like the proverbial bad penny, they're ecstatic." Wrench paused for breath. "Lessing doesn't discuss the present, his own experiences, what's happening in the world. He shows no interest. He doesn't seem to care. Not even about Pakov and Sterak. God, the things he must have seen. It's like a cinema film to him. He watches, but he does not participate, even when he himself is one of the actors." "He always was an aloof bastard," Wrench mused. "Our society bred many like him, the peripheral people, the terminally uninvolved, as somebody put it. I don't know if Lessing even cared that much about his wife." "Wife? What wife?" "You didn't know? My God, yes, a lovely Indian girl, Jamila Husseini. The Izzy's killed her during their raid on Poneape. He never told you?" "He never said. Well, we had no idea." The doctor appeared angry, almost as if Lessing had betrayed him personally. "As though she didn't affect him, not down deep where he lives." Wrench lifted the lid of the pot to see if there was any more tea. The stuff was strong and black and aromatic, the way he liked it. The doctor stood up. Whatever Alan Lessing lives, private, beneath barriers and walls and defenses thicker than any Fuhrer bunker. Wrench motioned to Lisa. Thanks for the tea. We have a plane to catch. Lessing should be ready by now. As they moved toward the door, Dr. Casimir said, By the way, Cadre Commander, I am a Jew. I had guessed it, Wrench said. I'm surprised you haven't moved on to the Izzy colonies in Russia. Copley doesn't bother me. I have things to do here. Things change, Wrench said and smiled. The liberals, in various guises and incarnations... Well, I'm going to guess that, yep, correct. That's the start to Chapter 22. So that's the end of Chapter 21 of Serpent's Walk. Chapter 21 of Serpent's Walk by Randolph O. Calverhall. And as I say, find it, everything we record, all the books, all the chapters, all the segments, and radio we've done as well, is always at vnnforum.com, which you're welcome to join. You're welcome to follow me, Alex Linder, at gab.com, the one uniced over social medium as we recorded this in middle of October of 2018. Anyway, thanks for being with me today. I'll be back with you again real soon, and we'll do more from Serpent's Walk.